Detroit Beard Collective is a proud sponsor of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com.
Guys, tired of trying to make that burly beard of yours look and smell good? Then check this out. Straight out of the Motor City, where they know a thing or two about being tough, comes Detroit Beard Collective, specializing in making that facial hair look good with products like beard butter, beard oils and soaps, specialty combs, and so much more. Come check out the line today at DetroitBeardCollective.com. DBC takes pride in using Detroit and Michigan-based companies and ingredients in all aspects of their product development and manufacturing as they continue to build Detroit's premier grooming company. Even burly dudes like to look and smell good, and DBC will make that happen. Do yourself and your badass beard a favor and log on to DetroitBeardCollective.com and check out all the amazing products they offer. And when you're ready to check out, use promo code SJPDBC to receive 10% off. Detroit Beard Collective, cleaning this world up one beard at a time.
And welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio for a new edition, a new show coming your way as we're still amongst all that is going on with COVID-19. We are social distancing within the studio. Tim Ellis and Brad Blair with you. Welcome inside Creaking Door. And Brad, hello.
Hello.
Here we are.
Hopefully we're on the downturn from all of this.
Seems to be.
Of the specialists, depending which network you watch, what doctor you listen to.
Right.
They don't agree on much of anything, but it does seem like things are on the downward spiral here with this. So.
From the very beginning, we heard the phrase flattening the curve, and it seems we are on the other side of that now.
I hope so.
Yeah, for
man,
sure.
I hope so. As we head closer to summertime,
mm-hmm.
and I want to be outdoors. I want to be with
too.
People.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to be sitting in my basement by myself. I can do that all winter. I do that all winter.
Right. That's just it. And we're social. Human beings are social beings. And even though we do like our alone time, this is a bit extreme.
It is.
I am ready to get things moving again, too. But, of course, we're all doing our part. And hopefully by our next show, maybe we can be talking about how things have started to change. But we'll see day by day.
And get back to some sort of normalcy. You know, it's amazing to me to look at social media. In fact, I've had to step away for a few days.
It is so you
can't lump all of this in as one.
Mm-mm.
You know, we've got a perfect example where we're at up here. It's almost non-existent.
Our entire county, Northern Michigan.
Yeah, our entire county has two cases.
Right.
The counties surrounding us have no more than four.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you get into the bigger cities where this is just awful.
Right.
But we're all lumped into one, and I guess that's the frustrating thing right now.
For sure. I mean, where we live, we're in a very rural area. Most of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan is. So we social distance by default. I mean, we're not
especially in the cold months.
Yeah.
So
we're just not in a crowded area. We have a lot of room. We have a lot mm-hmm. of space. And so, yeah, when we're in the same boat as, say, our Detroits and our Flints and our Saginaws that are hot spots, and
right.
the Michigan as a whole is like number three in the country.
It's really dropped.
Starting
now.
To drop
it's
now, which
really
is good.
Dropped. Last I checked, I believe we were down to seventh.
Well, there you go.
So it's
all right.
it is moving out.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, God willing, everything gets, as I say, it's not going to be what was normal again this year. I really don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Once we pop out a vaccine
mm-hmm.
and once they designate a treatment as effective, I think you're going to see things start to fall back into place. So, and I wouldn't be surprised at this time next year, if all of that is available, that we will be back to where we were before.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a whole year before we are back to, I agree with you, complete normalcy. Will we find a cure? I don't think so. I think we'll find something along the lines of a flu shot for this, which will allow people to be around each other again and not have it be so devastating.
And once, you said, they're fighting over these different treatments, but once there is that one smoking gun that they say, yes, we can treat it with this, it's going to take care of it in 99% of the cases. Then I think you'll see people relaxing a lot more as well.
Absolutely. And until then, though, hey, feel free to sit back and enjoy some Creaking Door episodes, because that's what we're here for, and that's why we're happy to be back in the studio to bring you another edition of, and that also brings us now to, of course, Paranews.
And with COVID, of course, affecting all countries, all societies, you know, at every level, naturally it's going to seep into the paranormal side of things as well. This first story coming out of Moscow. Last week, Russians of a certain age saw a familiar face return to their screens. Anatoly Kashpirovsky, a self-styled psychic healer who entranced TV audiences as the Soviet Union was coming apart three decades ago, is back as a YouTuber now, offering solace as the coronavirus spreads. Some are taking what he has to offer pretty seriously, too, helping revive the career of a man who had become almost forgotten. This guy, apparently, I've never heard of him before.
I haven't either.
Kashpirovsky, apparently he was the big name, maybe a step above even Miss Cleo, if you will, back in the Soviet Union in the day. So, yeah, they said he's got this YouTube channel going now. Almost a quarter of a million viewers have watched Healing Seance. This is a video posted on April 9th to Kashpirovsky's YouTube channel. He sits immobile against a background of beige wallpaper and asks viewers to cover their eyes with their hands. Not normally something you want people to do during a pandemic.
Yeah, very true.
Over the coming days, he says, towards the end of what is essentially an hour-long monologue, he says the comments will keep coming in from people who have been cured. Kashpirovsky, now 80, achieved celebrity status in the Soviet Union through a series of televised sessions beginning in 1989, 2 years before the country ceased to exist. Fixing his steely gaze on viewers who sat at home, some transfixed, he claimed powers to cure the sick and heal a nation that was hurting from the effects of economic decline. At the peak of his celebrity in the early 1990s, Kashpirovsky was traveling the country to appear before packed halls and placed second only to President Boris Yeltsin in surveys of Russia's most popular public figures.
So he's been up there.
He's there. He is a celebrity.
If I knew how to,
he was a celebrity in the Soviet Union back in the
making
day.
Making a comeback. Mm-hmm. If I knew how to spell his last name, I might try to look him up.
Kashpirovsky.
Yeah.
Yes.
I guarantee there's a lot of letters in there that
we're assuming I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Exactly. I'll go with you. It sounds good anyway. I'll go with that.
Catch him on YouTube.
All right. Well, here's one name you might be more familiar with than that gentleman, and it's Jose Canseco.
Oh, yes.
Remember him? Oakland A's, baseball star.
Baseball great.
Yep. And, of course, his career in baseball was marked a little bit by some tainted by some performance-enhancing drugs.
But that was the thing to do in the day.
It was.
He was far from alone in that.
That is very true. And he's also, though, been criticized a bit for some post-baseball tainted behavior, if you will, too, wondering if he's on some other kind of mind-altering substances. So recently, Jose tweeted about an alien contact and time travel. That was a year ago. He tweeted about this.
I seem to recall that.
I don't remember hearing about that.
He was making some headlines.
Okay.
with some strange behavior, yes.
Yeah. Well, he's back at it again. This week, he just tweeted about alien contact. This time, he threw in Bigfoot contact that he has had and expressed concerns that one or both of them could have had the coronavirus. And he's worried about not,
you know, they
doing
found,
the social distancing.
Was it the Bronx Zoo? They found that
the tigers
had it.
Yeah.
So Squatch might be, I don't know.
I don't know either, but Jose seems to be worried about it.
You would think the aliens would be able to get around that, but now Squatch being here on the planet with us.
Yeah.
Although they've always social distanced themselves quite well.
They do very well at it.
Yeah.
Very well. Now, the question is, a lot of people were asking on his tweet, Jose, do you feel like you got it from them or did you give it to them? That remains to be seen. Apparently, though, going back in 2019, he announced that he had contact with aliens. Canseco and Morgan Strello at Morgan Management announced that five lucky people with $5,000 each would get to go on a Bigfoot and alien excursion with Jose.
Yes. I remember that.
Now. No one bought it. Go to figure.
I think we covered that on a past show.
We may have. We very well may have. So, anyways, no one bought into the $5,000 hunt a year ago, and Jose's back at it again, saying he has since had more contacts with aliens and Bigfoot, and now he is concerned about COVID from them.
Are these separate contacts, or are the aliens and the Bigfoot together with him at once?
It does not say. That is a very good question. If they're traveling together.
You may want to call Jose and follow
I'll
up on that.
I'll dig deeper into this for sure.
Apparently not doing the social distancing things with the cryptids and the aliens.
They should know better. At least the aliens should.
Well, you would think so. So, you know, one way to get people to follow the rules, Indonesia, I love this story. A local Indonesia politician found a unique way to punish quarantine violators amid the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah.
Kustinar Sukawati.
You've got some really good names today.
It's that week, I guess. Head of Seragen Regency has begun locking those disregarding the quarantine inside abandoned houses that are believed to be haunted. All right. I'm
support that.
I would enjoy that.
Yeah, really.
I don't think that would be punishment. Sukawati noticed that many people traveling to Indonesia's densely populated Java Island were disregarding orders to isolate themselves for at least 2 weeks after arriving. So the Regency head decided to rely on local superstitions and fear to punish violators. If there's an empty and haunted house in the village, put people in there and lock them up, Sukawati stated.
Yes.
Villagers were ordered to convert abandoned homes into temporary detainment centers. Locals have a widespread belief that the buildings are haunted, a superstition connected to much of Indonesian folklore. Hiri Susanato, hey, I got another one, who came to Java from neighboring Sumatra, was locked up after disobeying the quarantine rules. He told the Associated Press that he'd learned a valuable lesson, although he hadn't encountered any ghosts yet.
Okay.
Yeah, but whatever happens, happens, Susanato said. I know this is for everyone's safety. Lesson learned. So there you go. I just find that
that's creative.
It is. It's great.
But
it's
their level of superstition over there is much different than ours.
Oh, absolutely.
So I could see where that could actually petrify someone over there.
Oh, I think so.
With their level of superstition.
Some of these different countries, and we've talked about this before, just they are so unique in taking their folklore seriously and some of the different superstitions. And yeah, I mean, you get some of these old timers in there and even some of the young that are brought up in these cultures.
Right.
They're going to be terrified. This will be enough to keep people in quarantine.
Yeah, for sure. So kudos to them thinking outside the box in that one. All right. My final story here for Parent News. Is it possible that NASA has found the planet that maybe Jose Canseco's alien is coming from? Because no, you don't think so? All right. NASA with their planet hunting Kepler spacecraft. Now, it is dead. They have retired it. The battery died. But it still keeps getting images from it. It's still sending because that's how long it took to get back. So they still continue to find photos rolling in. And scientists are analyzing data gathered by Kepler, which NASA retired in November of 2018. They found just recently a hidden gem. It's an Earth-sized world that may be capable of supporting life, not the type of life we find on Mars, which is, you know, a little
microbial.
Yeah. This is life as we know it. The exoplanet is called Kepler 1649c. It circles a red dwarf star that lies 300 light years from Earth, a new study reports. Kepler 1649c completes one orbit every 19 and a half Earth days, putting the alien planet in its host star's what they call habitable zone.
There we go.
Say that one slow without a beer. Habitable zone. And the just right range of distance where liquid water could exist on a world's surface. So found this very interesting. Kepler hunted for planets using the transit method, monitoring stars for tiny brightness dips caused by the planets crossing their face from the spacecraft's perspective. And it sent back many of them. As a matter of fact, Kepler spotted about two-thirds of the 4,100 confirmed exoplanets that astronomers have discovered to date. So very cool there. This is a new one that has just come through not too long ago, and no doubt they're going to be studying that one.
How do you do the follow-up on that?
I don't know.
You have to launch another satellite to head those 300? Did you say 300? 3,000 light years?
Yes, 3,000 light years.
3,000 light years.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's just it. I mean, so they launch another one, and they got to wait how long until they can get follow-up to that. So,
right.
Yeah.
It's not like this is an overnight process.
No, it's not. But interesting stuff. Nonetheless, that there is a yet another planet out there that is close enough to a star to be used as a sun and within the habitable zone.
There we go. I've been really intrigued with some of these stories coming back in, and I know there have been a couple of them now of SETI getting these radio waves coming out of space.
Yes.
That they have
very intrigued by those.
Been in some sort of they didn't think they were stray. They seem to be coming in some form of a pattern,
which is outstanding.
And yeah, that's something I've been following up on, and it just every couple months it seems they're getting another blast of these.
Yeah. Maybe they're trying to send us information on how to deal with what we're going through right now, you know, with COVID. Who knows?
Might be trying to call Jose and getting the wrong number, too.
Exactly. All right, there we go. That is Paranews on this edition of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, as we're going to take our first break now. And when we come back, very excited to have a first-time guest in the studio with us. Coming up next, stick around. This is Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com. Think of Michigan's Upper Peninsula as the scary attic sitting there above the rest of the state. I can think of no better guides to take you inside the history and lore than the guys of the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society. Those are the words from writer and lead researcher for the hit TV show Ghost Adventures, Jeff Belanger. For over 20 years, the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society has dedicated their lives to researching the paranormal. And now, some of their favorite cases are brought to life on the pages of their debut book, Upernatural Haunts. Come inside these pages with the team as they share intimately the history of each location and their experiences during their investigation. Learn their techniques and some of the most intense moments they have faced. True stories and true accounts of ghosts await you inside the pages of Upernatural Haunts by the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society. Get your autographed copy today at www.upernaturalhaunts.com. Welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Tim Ellis and Brad Blair with you, as heard on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and of course at our home, SlackJawPunks.com. Well, Brad, very excited to welcome our next guest in, as he is a first-time visitor to the Creaking Door.
Yeah, somebody we've been wanting to have in as well. So he came and joined us last year for the Michigan Paranormal Convention up here for the first time, and he will be returning this year as well.
Yeah, we're very excited to have him back. He is a man that spans the fields of everything weird and fun. He's an author, journalist, TV host, and personality. He's moderated some of the coolest panels you could ever think of, and all around a good guy. As you said, Brad, we finally had a chance to meet him at the 10th Annual Michigan Paranormal Convention. Please welcome inside the Creaking Door, Mr. Aaron Sagers. Aaron, thank you so much for being with us, man.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be inside the creaking door, on the right side of it.
You are, yeah, exactly. You're on the right side, and we apologize for any musty smell. It's just the way we keep it.
We'd like to blame it on the quarantine, but it always smells like this.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything, but, you know, I just try to my mom raised me to be polite.
Right. Well, we appreciate that, but we saw the look in your face. But anyways, we digress. No, Aaron, awesome, man. Thank you for taking time to be with us and, you know, these very challenging times, as you know, by trying to reach out and create some content and some entertainment for people. We're doing the same thing with the podcast as well, and we want to make sure we're allowing people to be a part of something that feels real in these very strange times.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is that it does allow you know, us as content creators to connect with people, but it also helps maintain sanity. You know, I've found that the talks I've been giving have been a really good outlet for me, as well as hopefully being a distraction, a good kind of distraction, right, for the people that are stuck at home.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and Brad and I just yesterday had another presentation we were scheduled to do, canceled on us. I know the same's got to be happening for you as well. So, and that is our creative outlet. That's our way to reach out to people and share this wonderful field and topic that we enjoy so much. But when you start to, you know, that continues to be taken away from you, it's the one thing I have found, and I know you're doing it with some new projects you're doing, is this has really pushed people to get a little more creative, to have to still reach out to the people.
Yeah, it has. And you're so correct that I at this point, there were multiple events I should have been at that understandably have had to be postponed or canceled, but it is my way of connecting with people directly in the public. So, but yeah, with the conversations I've been doing, it has allowed me to talk to friends such as you guys that normally things are somewhat abbreviated. Maybe you get a chance to chat with someone for about 5 or 10 minutes, and then you have to continue on with a busy schedule. But when you get like an hour with them to actually sit and hash it out, it's been kind of interesting and insightful, and I've been able to dig a little bit deeper with some of those colleague friends. But yeah, you know, booking people and getting all those guests set up, it is a challenge, but it's in trying times, it is a fun challenge to have.
Oh, sure. It is. And it's great to have, I think, and we've gotten so much feedback, I guess, too, lately on shows, and people stuck in, they really appreciate the fact that different shows are popping up, your events going on, your shows coming up. The hard thing, like Tim just mentioned, we've had, I believe, every presentation, every appearance we've had booked through the month of June are canceled.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it's just very tough for people, especially people I think that live alone, that are stuck inside at these times. And I know we've had correspondences with several of them that are very much into the paranormal field, but they're by themselves and in really low places during this. And I think shows like this and like yours are really an outlet for them. Something to look forward to, if you will.
Well, kind of to get their paranormal fix too, because these events that you speak at, Aaron, and we're a part of, people love coming to these for a reason. There's a social aspect to it as well, to share these stories and this common theme. And when that's taken away, well, this is now we're using social media to bring people together.
Yeah, and I do empathize with the folks living at home alone, because I do. I it's me and my dogs, my two dogs, and it is and although they make a lot of noise at times, they're not the most not the best conversationalists. And you know, but with the paranormal fireside chats that I've been doing, it has, yeah, it's been allowing me to have conversations, and I really think that the things that I have that have come out of some of these fireside chats have been thought-provoking, because we've been thinking about the paranormal in a way that none of us have really engaged with it before. You know, what is it like when suddenly we are all at home for an extended period of time? Mm-hmm. How does that impact the way we experience, process the paranormal activity in all its gloriously weird forms?
And you got to wonder what's a great point, Aaron. What's going to come out of this when this is all said and done for people who all of a sudden have had to stay at home longer than we probably ever have in our entire lives? We're there longer, especially if you're working from home now. And so you got to wonder the stories that are going to come out. Are people all of a sudden starting to pick up on things that maybe are happening in their home but didn't notice it at first?
Yeah, and I think obviously there's, from the haunted side of things, there is what's happening at home when people, as you said, they're instead of just home in the morning and at night and then that space in between, whatever's happening in the house. Like, you know, if you suddenly find out that 2:15 in the afternoon when you're normally at work, that's when crazy paranormal activity takes place.
Right.
Maybe it's just residual. Now you're suddenly seeing that, or you're paying more attention to certain sounds that your home makes. But in addition to that, I love thinking about, okay, there's less humans out and about in the world. So what does that mean as far as potential cryptid activity?
Mm.
The skies, there have been, I live in New York City, and there's been a reduction in air pollution. So, okay, maybe we can see the skies better. What are we potentially going to be able to see in the skies? I think across the board, it really impacts the way we could be encountering paranormal phenomena.
So do you think Bigfoot is going to be wandering more towards the cities now?
I think so, but he'll be wearing a mask and practicing social distancing because,
right.
I mean, actually, Bigfoot was practicing social distancing before it was
long
cool.
Before, yeah, and he's quite good at it, too. All right, Aaron, let's take a trip back. Bring us back into the life of Aaron Sagers. Anyone who's followed your career or on social media knows not only are you a self-proclaimed paranormal nerd, but you love the comic book side of things too. You've done so many comic cons and have hosted so many panels. I've always loved to watch the people you've got to sit next to on a stage and moderate panels with them. So take us back into your journey, young Aaron Sagers, into all this stuff and how you allowed yourself to kind of form that into a career.
Yeah, and thank you for asking. And that's also very kind of you to say. Looking back, I often joke that I would love to go back in time and talk to the 10-year-old version of myself and hopefully not terrify that 10-year-old version, but
yep.
But say, like, dude, everything that you're into now, this is going to be your life and your job. And for me, reading comic books, being into science fiction, watching horror movies, but also reading about paranormal theory, reading, Hans Holzer as a kid, reading the Time Life Mysteries of the Unexplained, things like that. That was all one and the same. So my love of nerdy stuff and my love of paranormal all was bundled up together and came out of the same place. So when I went through my career, I was a writer and a journalist, and I started working at newspapers and magazines, and I was a young editor, and a couple things kind of took place around the same time, right around 2005. There was this explosion in nerdy pop culture. So suddenly there were the Star Wars prequels, which began in 1999, but the Star Wars prequels were wrapping up around 2005. There was Batman Begins. There was a new Spider-Man movie. So there was all these nerdy things happening. But at the same time, around 2004, 2005 is when we saw the emergence of the modern paranormal reality TV
right.
show, and I was positioned to talk about those things from a media standpoint, and I wrote some things that got some attention and also commented on the fact that this whole thing called social media was very new at the time was going to change the way we connect and talk about all of these things, and that kind of set me on a path where suddenly I was talking at paranormal conventions. Suddenly I was appearing on, you know, CNN to talk about weird stuff like zombies and nerdy stuff as well. And then led to doing a Travel Channel show, executive producing it based on paranormalpopculture.com, the website I created. Executive produced Paranormal Paparazzi with Zach Bagans, and then, you know, would appear on things like Portals to Hell, and now currently on Paranormal Caught on Camera on Travel Channel. So for me, that journey has always kind of made sense in its own weird way, that I've just been nerding out and talking about the things I love, And I've been fortunate to meet other people that, you know, similarly share those passions. And somehow people have paid me to do it on stage and on camera and on paper. So, and I'm constantly grateful for it.
We just had John Zaffis on the show a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about Paranormal Caught on Camera. He's a big fan of it, John is. And that's one show that's really kept my attention.
Mine too.
As far as the reality genre goes, I don't want to say I've never gotten heavily into it, but it's not something that I've ever been a big fan of. Now, I love the fact that this show is ran the way it is, mm-hmm. with people sending clips in with the evaluation of it, and you never really hear anybody debunking on the show is the one thing that kind of gets me, I think. But I love that they're putting this raw footage out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, let me say, yeah, you're right. Like, it's not really a show you watch for debunking, and that's obviously by design, you know. Mm-hmm. I think by and large, the audience that watches a lot of paranormal TV, they're already more on the belief side of the spectrum, which does not mean that you shouldn't be skeptical. In fact, an episode that just aired recently, I was kind of commenting on the fact that these paranormal investigators were using a lot of flashing lights, and my thought was like, well, you're not going to be able to actually visually see anything because you're going to be blinded by this. So that's impacting your investigation. But yeah, it's not really a debunking kind of show. And frankly, we never know what's truly happening on the other side. When people captured that footage, what was going through their head, what are all the things happening surrounding it? So myself and the other panelists, analysts, we're looking at it just based on that footage, applying our knowledge and saying, okay, this, based on what I'm seeing, this is what I think, or these are the questions I might have, and as a journalist, I try to put myself in the head of those people capturing that and gauge, like, the response, the fear, the excitement, what's going on in all those ways too, and try to like come up with essentially the story behind the story, if that makes sense. And it's been a really fun challenge, and I feel like I'm learning things by looking at friends and colleagues like Brian Kano and listening to how he looks at something entirely different than I do, which is not to say incorrectly. It's just we have sometimes different approaches. I love that thing so much. I love that part of it so much.
Yeah, what I really enjoy about it too is, and as Brad was saying, it's not like the other shows that are out there right now, that it actually brings me back to tapping into that paranormal nerd as kids and waiting for Sunday mornings for In Search Of to come on. You know, I couldn't wait for In Search Of to come on TV on Sunday mornings after wrestling, of course. Mm-hmm. Had to watch Sergeant Slaughter, and then I'd watch Leonard Nimoy. And that's what Paranormal Cut on Camera kind of brings me back to, and I think that's why I enjoy
it's
it
a
so
fun,
much.
It's a fun show to watch.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and I 100% agree. My Sergeant Slaughter love came mainly from G.I. Joe, although I did love Sergeant Slaughter as a wrestler as well. However, no, I agree with you. I would watch the reruns of Leonard Nimoy on In Search Of, as well as like Robert Sack on Unsolved Mysteries.
Yes.
And I do think that this is sort of, these are the modern legends and folklore. And it's made all the more compelling, this show, because it impacts every element of our lives. I mean, right now I'm talking to you via essentially a supercomputer I carry around in my pocket, my smartphone. I'm looking at, I've got a couple laptops set up in front of me for various projects. Each have a webcam. I actually have a dog camera in another room, so when I leave the house, I can, you know, kind of pop in and see what's going on with the dogs. Like, there's, you know, doorbell cams. So we are recording every element, every aspect of our lives, and unwittingly, potentially recording all this amazing phenomena. And what's even cooler is when it actually lines up with legends and reports pre-existing an area, like Native American lore or urban legends of a place. Like, yeah, sure, maybe some of that stuff is who knows, fabricated, but I tend to think that it's more interesting because we are capturing the life and the afterlife around us.
Yeah, for sure. Now, Aaron, is there any piece of footage that you've seen that has been on one of the episodes, or maybe it's on the cutting room floor, but you saw it and it just freaked you out?
You know, I mean, I think that happens occasionally. It's not just one piece, but anytime I see something about like the cryptid footage in particular creeps me out, because people will be in the woods or maybe even driving along the road, especially in somewhere like Russia, and suddenly there's this beast or this thing that starts chasing their car, and the people in the car are freaking out, and it just feels very real to me. And or when it's around, like in the woods around their house, and they're hearing the whooping of a potential Sasquatch,
right,
even if that thing doesn't mean to be threatening, it sounds threatening because you're very exposed, you're at home, and suddenly you feel very vulnerable. However, I do have to say, a piece of footage I did not comment on, I just saw it when I was watching the episode live, was so startling. It was it looked like a creature, but it was almost like a shadow figure, but in the form of a creature, kind of trashing this apartment, I believe in Eastern Europe. And I think that predated me joining the show, but I saw this footage. I'm like, this is wild and unsettling and so freaking cool.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where I go. I'm like, this is scary, this is unsettling, but man, this is cool.
The one that gets me too, and I just saw it again on a rerun, you mentioned Russia, and it made me think of that. It was the one where this guy's trying to get his dog that's just cruising right by him, and he turns the corner, and there's this little girl in a yellow jacket, and she's like floating in the air. And the mom's like freaking out that her kid's just kind of floating in the air. And then it's like that for about 10, 15 seconds. And then all of a sudden the girl just comes right back to the ground. The mom grabs her and runs off. And I don't know why that one freaks me out as much, but it's just so weird and not what you expect to see, that it really took me out of my comfort zone.
Yeah. And no, I know which one you're talking about. And the thing I think about with that kind of footage, or sometimes you see footage as where you look at it and you're like, that's a little too good,
right?
That yes, can't be legit, that's a little too good. And I agree, it goes through my head too, but then I kind of push back on that thought in my own brain and I think, well, that's exactly what we want. We're looking for too good, because when we're just seeing something that's shaky or something that's fuzzy, then we're like, well, we can't really do anything with that. It's compelling, it's interesting, but that's also not the great framing or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or so essentially, what is that? What's that benchmark that we're looking for? We want good, right? We want solid evidence. So when we capture it's almost like we're so used to getting crappy footage that we don't want to believe it when it's actually good.
Right.
You know? That's a whole weird psychology when looking at some of this stuff.
And I think, too, with today's technology, we've also become so skeptical when someone does submit something that we raise that eyebrow, too. And I think we got to back off from that a little bit to allow these pieces of footage to come forward and say, okay, maybe we're seeing something. Mm-hmm.
I 100% agree with you. Of course, you should be skeptical. You should be
absolutely
analytical about these things. You should try to get as much, I mean, not just take it at face value, but with the advancement in technology, arguably, we are going to get really crisp, clear, compelling footage, and to just dismiss it out of hand is not a good approach,
right?
You know, so I mean, and along with that, the advancements in technology means it's going to be we'll have more convincing ways to also fake and fabricate things. So, you know, always wear that skeptical hat and ask the right questions and try to get to the bottom of it. But you know, maintain that open mind on in both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. The television field in general, it seems like it's gotten, and Tim and I talked about this a couple of years ago. We said it's kind of gotten saturated. It's calming down now. And now it seems like Travel Channel in particular has just jumped full both feet in. And nonstop paranormal programming, day and night on travel. Where do you think this hits its saturation point at, Aaron? Are we there now?
Well, it's a interesting question because I give a presentation sometimes at some events called "How to Get Canceled on Paranormal TV" because Paranormal Paparazzi, which is a show that I remain proud of, a quirky little show. We came out in 2012 and we lasted a season and then we kind of just went away. We were never officially canceled. We just kind of went away, which is sort of what happened. And it was because things were saturated and there was suddenly a drop off in ratings and not with us, but just across the board, people weren't tuning in as much. And then it kind of died down for a bit, pun intended. And then you start seeing scripted fiction like The Conjuring and other movies come along that really help bring it back, that were showing good, scary material. And I think that reinvigorated the unscripted component to it. And there was suddenly a lot more platforms to watch content on. You know, right now, I can't even say how many things I subscribe to and then how many more are out there that I don't subscribe to.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, with that, so that's why I almost think it won't get too saturated again, because there's a need and a hunger for content. And if you're hitting the right audience on the right platform, then as long as you're maintaining the right budget, keeping it under control, like, I think that people will keep tuning in for that. And that doesn't even take into account the millions of channels on somewhere like YouTube,
right,
where a much younger demographic is tuning into those. So, yeah. And even right now, what we're dealing with right now, the lockdown and the pandemic, I think that creates interesting and unique opportunities for unscripted programming, reality programming, and specifically paranormal programming, because it takes less time to ramp up and get something like a ghost hunting show in production. You know, you don't have to, there's less time involved as compared to a scripted show, you know?
Right.
So when this is done, I think you're going to see a lot of nimble shows able to just start filming and get out there. So there'll be, I think, even more in a couple months to a year off.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Very interesting. Now, you had mentioned, Aaron, a couple times now, the TV show Paranormal Paparazzi, so I want to go to that for a moment here, because to me, that is very much like Paranormal Caught on Camera in the sense that it was different than anything out there at the time. I enjoyed the show. It reminded me of, it was based, as you had said, on your website, Paranormal Pop Culture, but, you know, to me, for someone who has also enjoyed the TV show, TMZ. It reminded me of the paranormal version of TMZ, and I really enjoyed that, and I was so disappointed when it didn't come back.
Yeah, and it was, I don't say this just because I was involved with it, it was ahead of its time. I think it's the kind of show that would do very well right now, because it did combine the mission. You know, Zach was an excellent partner to work with, and obviously Zach's, you know, power and influence helped push that thing along. The idea was to always combine like some sort of entertainment story and a lifestyle story, you know, a guy that lives in a zombie, a bunker in Texas because he's prepping for a zombie apocalypse, but then cut to an interview with someone like Norman Reedus. You know, do like some sort of haunting story and then cut to a director from Paranormal Activity. Yeah, it was a fun and interesting project. And I think, like I said, it kind of came along at a time when we were really reaching that peak of all of the reality shows and things just started dropping off. So it was just sort of the nature of the business. But yeah, that and the TMZ approach was very much Zach's idea and very much, you know, reflects Zach Bagan's magic. You know, he saw that potential there. And I admit I was a little reluctant about that format at first, but once we got into it, I'm like, all right, I kind of dig this. This is kind of a fun way to approach the paranormal.
Right. Well, and it was.
And you had a fun group of personalities on there,
for
too.
For sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and many that I remain, you know, very close with, and I enjoy seeing how they go on and do different interesting things. And, you know, like Rachel Fine and Scott Grunewald, you know, and like it's a good group of people. So, yeah, it's certainly a fun project. And I think that is part of the reason I enjoy Paranormal Caught on Camera so much, is it certainly shares some kind of spiritual DNA with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I mentioned that earlier, that the two kind of remind me of each other in that aspect. All right, Aaron, let's fast forward now. Let's come up to modern day Aaron Sagers and what's going on along with Paranormal Caught on Camera. But you're also doing some, especially as we're on the stay-at-home mandates right now, you've created a couple things that are going on. One that I've had a chance to catch a couple episodes of, Paranormal Pop Culture Fireside Chats. And you're integrating a little bit newer. You're not just going Facebook Live, like you're bringing in some new software out there and really kind of having some fun with that.
Yeah, it was basically a way for me to pass the time during the lockdown, but I've been reading some ghost stories, I've been talking about paranormal theory, but also bringing in guests, you know, like a voodoo expert to debunk sort of the misconceptions about voodoo and really talk about the origins of it, and then do some live tarot card readings and talk about the philosophy of tarot cards and a lot of different kind of things. But yeah, to your point, as far as the technology, it's exciting for me because I'm teaching myself how to use certain video equipment, certain brushing off some Photoshop skills, and just having like some cool conversations. And you see a good cast of folks show up in that chat room every night and show up with these great, great questions. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think, and it's fun. And it's something that I've been doing it Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, every week at 9 PM Eastern time. And it's something that even after this lockdown ends, I'm going to try to maintain in some form or fashion, just because I'm having such a great time chatting about all these topics.
Yeah, what platforms can people find it on, other than, I know Facebook obviously, but what other platforms?
Yeah, it goes live on Facebook, it also goes live on YouTube, and then it lives there, it stays there after the fact, and then I also upload it on Instagram, which is just instagram.com/AaronSagers. And so those, and then I'll also typically link to it through Twitter, so it's kind of a lot of the different places. I guess it's not on LinkedIn and Twitch, but maybe I should put it out there. I don't know.
Might as well.
Why not?
Yeah, in today's world, everyone's on social media. You might as well get as many out there as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
So on top of that, then, the Fireside Chats, you've also got another project you're still working on, which is a podcast.
Yeah, apparently I like to stay busy, even during lockdown.
Good for you.
It's called Nightmarica, and the podcast it really came about in a fun way. A friend of mine who is a younger woman, a millennial, and I'm a Gen X kid, we were talking about the paranormal, true crime, and, you know, I think you guys can probably understand this, that as much as you love the paranormal, sometimes it feels like we're in a bit of an echo chamber when we're just talking to one another. It can be inspiring, but also sometimes it feels like we're saying the same thing.
Yep.
And it's also largely dominated by dudes like us of a certain age, and largely dominated by white dudes of a certain age. And the idea with this
so
is
true.
Like bringing in someone else, bringing in a younger woman who is interested, but doesn't necessarily have the same background. And so we kind of go to a different type of location each week, virtually, and tell a story. And it might be a true crime story. It might be a cryptid story, a lot of ghost stories, some weird urban legends and lore. And, you know, and kind of anchoring it at that type of location, whether it's a theme park or on a boat or at a music venue or whatever. And and it's forced me to really think about, well, what do I think about some of these concepts when I'm talking to someone that doesn't know about the concepts? What do I think about a famously supposedly haunted location when I'm telling that story to someone that doesn't know it? And I got to tell you, sometimes even stories that I really like, when I start kind of laying out all the details to someone else, I'm like, that sounds a little thin when I say it out loud, you know, like, as opposed to just being like, yeah, you know that location, right? Yeah, it's haunted. Yeah, I've been there. You know, when you're telling it to someone new, they're like, okay, so you're saying maybe someone died there whose cousin was, you know, and you're like, all right, yeah, that does sound a little thin. So, yeah, Nightmarica, and a new episode drops every Wednesday. It's on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and it's just a really, I think, a different approach and bringing in a different voice into this community, which is desperately needed. So it's not just a bunch of old farts talking about the paranormal.
Well, let me just say, if the next episode of Creaking Door, Brad or I are replaced with a younger millennial, we know what just happened. Oh man, it sounds too good. Dang it, why didn't we think of that?
Well, that's the thing, is I always try to preface it with like, I still want a job.
Yeah, right.
I still need to work. I want more people in this field. But I also want to stick around.
Right.
Yeah. Now, you've been involved over the years with the big cons, Dragon Con, San Diego Comic-Con. Where do you see these events, Aaron, coming out of where we're at right now? And God willing, there's some semblance of normalcy coming out of the end of this year or maybe going into next year. Do you see these having a major change, or do you think it's going to go right back to status quo?
I don't think it's going to be an immediate return. I think that it will be gradual. However, I also believe that humans are very adaptable, and we will develop sort of a new normal. So, for instance, maybe, you know, when the cons return, there will be more face masks at those cons. Mm-hmm. Maybe going forward, that's what'll be happening.
Right.
And maybe there will be more of a staggered line system for autographs and things like that. And maybe they'll drop the attendance cap, you know, so less people on the floor at a time. I think there will be changes. However, I do think people crave that interaction. Mm-hmm. I know I do. And I think that people will be excited to go back to celebrating with fellow fans at the cons.
Yeah.
So different, but it will return. And, you know, unfortunately, like San Diego Comic-Con, which is the biggest or one of the biggest,
right,
did have to cancel. And I think it was a good call. But I really think, you know, once we're looking at late summer and fall, there will be essentially like a new normal that develops, and I embrace it as long as we're all being smart.
Yeah, I see a lot of people now trying to push more and more content, as we're talking about right now, online, and that's great with different platforms, but I think when it comes down to the cons and different interactive events, people really want that one-on-one time. They want to be face-to-face with their favorite celebrities, favorite authors, you know, people from whatever genre they may be into. And you're obviously not going to get that, even if you're on a platform that you can ask questions back and forth online, that face-to-face, that getting that picture, getting that autograph. I think it's something that people, especially coming out of this, are really going to be craving.
Yeah, most certainly. And, you know, I do think it's excellent and it's nimble to move some content online right now. Mm-hmm. And I certainly endorse that. However, meeting someone like, Patrick Stewart via, you know, the internet, or even like a cameo, is cool. It's definitely exciting.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's not the same as being at a con and seeing him and having that brief moment with him. Or, you know, for me, like I've moderated some of these online panels or online talks, but it's not the same as sitting on a stage, you know, next to that person. So,
right.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we're social creatures, right?
Right.
Like, and that is a challenging part to all this. We are social creatures and we want to be around one another. It does feed us. It does kind of energize us.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Aaron. So, you know, wrapping up here then, one last question for you, because you've been able to be a moderate and be a part of some amazing panels at these cons over the years. And I got to imagine, is there one that stands out for you where you were just totally in awe, like this is a childhood dream come true that you got to be a part of?
That is a really good question, and I think sometimes that answer even changes. But I've been on stage with the entire cast of Star Trek The Next Generation. I've been on stage with, you know, all of the, or many cast members from the original Star Trek. I interacted with a lot of people that I consider heroes. For me, though, sharing a stage and then even talking behind the scenes and then doing this multiple times with Stan Lee.
Oh, wow.
Remains
yeah.
my favorite moments. I was fortunate throughout the years to interact with him quite a bit, but being on stage with him is just it is one of those moments that, as I said earlier, if I could look back and talk to that 10-year-old kid, that nerdy kid, and be like, dude, you are going to be on a, like, Stan Lee is going to talk to you and you're going to have this experience. Just hang in there. Hold on. I probably wouldn't believe it. And I still kind of don't believe it. Like, I still, like, right now, can't believe that I've been so fortunate to have certain experiences like that. So, as sad as I am that Stan has passed, I'm incredibly grateful that I had the experience of hosting for him, and it remains a kind of a magical memory for me.
That's cool. I know the one that I saw that really stood out to me for you was being able to be with the Back to the Future group.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, that one. Yeah. I was able to do cast reunions with those guys a couple times, but I was the very first person. I worked with Universal Home Entertainment. They brought me out to London, and we did essentially a test run with Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, Leia Thompson, and then a lot of the other characters, like the guy that played Mayor Goldie Wilson, and then a couple other folks in it. So that was a bit of a test run out in London. That following October 2015, was Back to the Future Day, and it was a big deal, probably one of the more higher profile panels I've hosted. Red carpet, you know, being in a DeLorean. They
nice.
Were, you know, it was like those guys were on the, you know, Tonight Show and things like that, and being on stage with all of them, including Huey Lewis and Bob Gale, who was one of the creators and producers of the franchise, and talking backstage with Michael J. Fox about the Twilight Zone of all things.
And
doing these deep dives about, like, his favorite episodes, and then having been able to do that again with Tom Wilson, who played Biff. You know, he eventually joined in the fray, and Back to the Future is one of my favorite movies. It's like up there with Star Wars and Raiders of the Lost Ark and Jaws, and so sharing the stage with those guys that were so important to me.
You bet.
As a kid was an amazing experience, and you know, I got to ride in a DeLorean.
that in itself, which I didn't even realize that until you just shared that part of the story. I just remember seeing you sharing some of it on social media. And of course, you know, I think you and I are very much of the same age genre. And so, you know, growing up in the Back to the Future movies as part of my young, you know, child and young adult life was just outstanding. So when I saw that, I'm like, oh, that is cool, Aaron. Good for you. So
And the coolest moment is when these guys who you know, some of them hadn't really spoken to one another in you know, what, nearly 30 years since the last movie came out.
Wow.
Not that there was any beef. It was just, you know, people get busy and they go on with their lives. But so then when they're on stage and a moment comes, you know, they exchange this moment where suddenly they're remembering something that they hadn't talked about, in even in many interviews throughout the years with the media. Suddenly there's this fresh experience that's unfolding. It's palpable. It's this really exciting energy that occurs in the room, and you really feel like this has been a real experience. And you know, like discovering that like Tom Wilson and Michael J. Fox and Bob Zemeckis, the director, would, you know, go to the screening room some days and like watch cowboy movies when they would be filming Back to the Future Part 3. And, you know, or Tom Wilson talking about these old Hollywood cowboys that were in the movie that were teaching them how to be a quick draw expert, like things like that. It feels like you're part of history there. And it's such a special feeling.
Yeah, that's outstanding. Aaron, man, keep living the dream. You know, you've taken what so many of us grew up as kids loving, and you've made it to be your career, and that's pretty outstanding. So continue to do that so we can live vicariously through you, all right?
Well, hey, no, look, you're not just going to live vicariously through me. We're going to be hanging out together soon.
That's right.
And I am confident we're going to be able to do that. I'm super excited about that. So I look forward to nerding out with you guys in Michigan and with everyone that's going to be there. So you know, we'll have a grand old time nerding out then.
Absolutely. And another thing too, people may not know about you. You're a lover of hats, and I learned that at Paracon this past year. So bring many more to Michigan with you, will you?
I am a man of many hats, and I will bring many with me.
Fantastic. Right. ParanormalPopCulture.com is where you can find him. You can also see him on Paranormal Caught on Camera. You can also see him with his Fireside Chats, Paranormal Pop Culture Fireside Chats, and you can listen to him on Nightmarica. He's all over the place. It's Aaron Sagers. Aaron, thank you so much for taking time to come on inside the creaking door.
I had such a great time, guys. Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more on the way. This is Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com.
Do you love your horror films, comic books, and TV shows served up with a side of what the f***? Then we have the place for you.
Slackjaw Punks!
Yeah, SlackjawPunks.com. We dare you to check them out. A podcast that focuses on all the new horror films, comic books, and TV shows, and interviews with the authors and directors, but covered only the way the guys from
Slackjaw Punks
can do it. Plus, you can enjoy written commentary on all of the new stuff, too, from a whole slew of staff writers. So stop wasting time and check it out.
Slackjaw Punks!
SlackjawPunks.com. Serving it up with a side of what the f***.
And welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Tim Ellis, Brad Blair hanging with you. All right, Brad, it is now time to end our show with a segment we call Mailbag. Yeah, where people can they can send us questions, they can send us stories. We've had people just share stories with us before. And also, like we said, you want to send recipes that we can cook some good stuff, hey, we'll try it. We'll share it with you.
Especially during lockdown.
That's right, exactly. But anyways, all you got to do is go to our Facebook page, Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. We're the only one on there. Send it to us there. You can find us online as well with our webpage. So here we go. Today's mailbag comes from Deborah. We want to say hello to our listeners to the north, Kingston, Ontario.
Neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Our neighbors just to the north of us, of course, where we are located in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. We're right on the border of Canada, so very familiar with the province of Ontario. So here's what Deborah has to say. Hello, Creaking Door. I am excited to be submitting a question and hope it makes the show. Which, by the way, I found your show about 2 months ago while on Spotify and searching for podcasts about weird stuff.
That's
what she says. She says, and that's how I found you guys, under the heading of weird, and then a wink emoji. So, hey, we'll take that. This is where weird is cool, man. All right, so she says, my question is this. The legend and search for Bigfoot has been around since the days of early Native American tribes sharing their stories. Mm-hmm. Why they have never truly been found, or bodies of them have never been found, has frustrated researchers. Over the past 10 years, a new theory has started to surface to suggest that the creature known as Bigfoot is actually an alien or a creature from another dimension. And that's why we never find bodies. This particular theory is one I'm having trouble wrapping my head around and not sure I can get on board with. I love to believe that they are just highly intelligent creatures that live among us and know how to avoid man, live peacefully, and they bury their dead. And that's why we don't find the bodies. Would love to get both of your thoughts on this. Thank you, and keep up the good work. Deborah, Kingston, Ontario. Thank you, Deborah. Great question.
Thanks, Deborah. Yeah, the multidimensional theory has been around actually quite a while, Deborah. I think the UFO and Bigfoot coming with the extraterrestrial theory, that I've read more on in the last, I guess, decade.
Right.
But the multidimensional, I think there is some merit to it if you can open your mind and think along those lines.
Yeah.
It's Bigfoot's the one thing that I guess out of all the cryptids that you throw against a wall, it kind of sticks just out of the sheer number of witness sightings and your evidence that's left behind, the hair,
yep,
the footprints,
the feces,
the scat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's all of this, but as you say, Deborah, there has not been a corpse found.
Right.
Which you can be walking through the woods and stumble upon the bones or the remains of a white-tailed deer or a bear. You know, these things are found out there in nature. I don't know that I think Bigfoot is burying its dead out in the forest. Maybe it is. But you would think that would be kind of an obvious grave. They're not using tools. They would be using their hands more than anything else.
Right.
And at some point in time, you would think that somebody, whether they're looking for Bigfoot or just out hiking in the woods, is going to stumble upon one of these freshly dug mounds and curiosity is going to get the best of them,
right,
and have them dig in. So I'm not sure on that. I guess the alien aspect of it, the whole basis behind that is there have been Bigfoot sightings that have correlated with UFO sightings, and they claim this bright flash before people see them. I guess I'm not the one to ask about that. I haven't looked as deeply into that as the multidimensional theory. So, you know, it's a lot to grasp.
It is, and that's the thing. You know, and you're right, Brad. The theory has been around for longer than a decade. I think within the decade, though, you got people like Dana and Greg Newkirk,
yeah,
who are really—they are true believers on the other, you know, the other chance that Bigfoot is from somewhere else.
Well, and I think Greg's whole—he had that theory going that Bigfoot was a ghost,
right, and a ghost
it's,
too,
it's, some type of a species that had once roamed the area.
Yeah. So the fringe theories, if you will, and it's funny we're talking about fringe theories of a fringe subject, but the fringe theories have been out there. But I just think with the internet and folks like Greg and Dana, who have really been, they've done a lot of presentations on it, are really kind of opening people up to that more. But I'm along the same lines as you, Deborah. And maybe it's just because it's what I grew up with as a kid. And, you know, I want to believe that that they are this species, that there's enough uncharted wilderness out there these days that they can still hide, do their thing. And they're smart enough to take care of their own. If I had to go beyond that, I can't get my head around the fact that he's cruising around in a UFO with ET. I can't do that one. Maybe interdimensional. Maybe a doorway opens between our side and their side, and he cruises through that sometimes. Maybe, but I can't do the UFO one. I'm going to stick with what I grew up with as a kid, and that they live among us.
It's just an animal.
They do their thing. Yeah,
it's just an unknown animal. I really wanted to believe that, and my thought on it is, if there was a breeding population, and I know this is one of the more popular theories, but if and it's among skeptics definitely, if there was a breeding population, you would have found remains by now, at the very least.
You would think, yeah, exactly.
At the very least. So there has to be, in my mind, some type of a supernatural aspect to this creature.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting. And more people are talking about that now, too, and which makes the discussion and the debate even better. You know, it opens up people's minds to talk and share stories. So great question, Deborah. We've never had that one before. And thank you for listening in Kingston, Ontario. Feel free to tell all your friends in Kingston about Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. All right, Brad, that's going to bring us to the end of this segment, unless we've got anything else we need to throw in there.
You know what? I'm good.
You're good. So we'll stay good.
Go back to the basement, crack a cold one, yes. And wait for the world to end.
There you go.
Hopefully the next time we come at you, we've got better news to report.
For sure. Yeah. So, again, thank you to everyone out there who is hanging out with us with each and every show that we put out there. We've been doing this for a handful of years now, and we love doing it. So thank you for your continued support. Remember, you can always find us on the other platforms as well, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and as Deborah had said, she found us on Spotify. So thank you again for tuning in, and that's going to do it for this edition of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by SlackJawPunks.com.
The Creaking Door.